You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage. I'm speaking with Deutsche Bank's Joe Lavorgna. Joe, let's turn to the Federal Reserve and monetary policy. We were just talking about it before the break there. You know, I was struck by the Yellen speech in Jackson Hole that essentially came across as what I call the IDK speech, or I don't know. I mean, she listed all of the adjustments to the Federal Reserve policy since 2012 and all of the uncertainties surrounding monetary policy. I mean, is this her way of defending the go-slow approach to ending the Fed's extraordinary easy monetary policy?
It's partly that. It's also the fact that in all of Yellen's speeches from the time she became chair, she's always added the caveat that we're data-dependent. So while I would argue that she is extraordinarily dovish and the market has the right read on her, she's always given herself the out. If things turn out to be better, if things evolve faster, the Fed then will change policy accordingly. There's two problems for investors. One is they only listen to the first half of what she says.
Right.
That's number one. And number two, if you go back and look what the Fed had said back in May of 2004, it is remarkable, and what Greenspan had said in testimony, it is remarkably similar to what the Fed said now. And, of course, they raised rates in June of 2004.
Right, 17 times, by the way, just to remind everybody.
Yep, and 17 times, went from 1 to 5 and a quarter, but the markets wasn't really prepared for it as it got very close to the time that the Fed hiked. But the rhetoric changed real quickly. So in other words, the market is listening to one half of what the Fed is saying. This is my perception anyway. And then we know that when the Fed even thinks it knows what it's going to do, and I'm using 2004, if you look back at the minutes and the statements, it's just we've got slack in the labor market, we're going to go slow, and all of a sudden they hike, and there's not as much slack as they thought. So these things can change really quickly, and that's the tricky part of investing, is that people try to time these things, and sometimes the timing can really be off. We have to be very careful in interpreting the Fed and approaching it from a much more broad perspective. So I just don't think people necessarily do that.
Interesting. Well, for our audience, so, you know, what are the three, I guess, key metrics that the Fed uses to gauge growth, and where do these stand? I mean, if Yellen's data dependent, then certainly, you know, these will help us as guideposts for when they could act.
Sure. So, I mean, So I would say that the data that probably – so let's go to the series that are not back to their previous cyclical peak, because the unemployment rate is certainly got to fall lower, but it is falling.
Right.
So let's not say that, because we know that. I would say the things that the more esoteric data the Fed's watching that your listeners might find of interest to watch, the quit rate, which is part of the JOLTS, the Job Opening
right.
Labor Turnover Survey, the quit rate. Quit rate's increased, but it's not increased enough. Job separations. Same thing. People leave their job. That again, same thing. It's trending higher, but still well below its previous peak. And then I would say that then the rate of job creation probably has to accelerate. So we're generating, you know, 230 odd jobs a month, 230,000 a month. We probably need to see job growth about 250 or a bit above that. So I would say those are probably the three things we need. We need to see people voluntarily quit their job. We need to see, number one. Number two, we need to see pace of job growth accelerate. And I guess the third thing we need to see is some evidence that the participation rate is probably stabilized. You asked me earlier, we probably don't want to see that thing continuing to fall because Yellen believes that they could stabilize it through activist monetary policy. I don't believe that to be the case, but you know we might stabilize it because I think, as I said, people who are unemployed will come back in as employed. So that's how you get the stabilization. But those are the things you'd watch. But again, you know, she's not told us exactly what it is. You said, I don't know. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I gave you two series to watch, but
right.
In reality, she doesn't know. And this is why the Fed can change its on a dime. All of a sudden, one series that maybe I didn't mention gets them nervous, and they start to change their tune, and then all of a sudden they've changed. And this is how these things happen. They happen very abruptly.
Yeah.
Out of left field sometimes.
Well, and I think the thing for people to understand is that the Fed, while they have a crystal ball, it's pretty murky. And the other thing I always try to repeat to everybody is the Fed has no experience in their history of really engaging in this type of quantitative easing and then, of course, backing away from it. So to your point, they may act a lot faster, you know, just because they've never done anything before like this, and they're kind of running without a playbook.
Well, that's right, and that's why I was saying, that's why investors are worried about what happens to risk assets when this Fed steps back. How do you play it? How will the economy behave? And what I've observed in the past is that typically interest-sensitive sectors of the economy, such as housing, typically do not peak until the funds rate's going up at least 200 basis points. So, again, it's one of those things where a little bit of tightening is good, a lot of tightening is bad. People are more worried just about the fact that the Fed is just changing stance, and I think they're might be losing sight of the, you know, the forest for the, you know, trees for the forest, if you will.
Right.
But again, we'll see. We don't know, because as you said, Andy, we don't, you know, we've never been in this spot before, so maybe the reaction's much worse than I'm thinking.
Right. Well, what worries me, and let me paint a scenario. I love painting scenarios for people, but you know what worries me is that they stay too easy for too long. And then they have to over-adjust by raising rates faster, which somewhat plays into your scenario. I mean, does that come into your analysis, Joe, anywhere, or am I just like a crazy, paranoid, no, grassy knoll guy?
Well, you may be all of those things, Andy, but but you look, Milton Friedman was famous for this. It said the Fed should be replaced by a computer that set a steady course for the money supply.
Mm.
So this is what you just described as traditional business cycle driven by the Fed, where the Fed overstays its accommodation and overhikes. And they overstay their accommodations, you get inflation. The last cycle, the inflation was in housing. The cycle before that, it was in stocks. And all the previous cycles was typical goods and service inflation. So what you just described is what historically has always happened, and the lags are long and variable, as Milton Friedman was famous for saying as well. But, of course, what you just described is what typically will happen, and that they overdo it, and on both sides. And my guess is the same thing is going to happen again, because that's always what happens.
Yeah, and, you know, given that they've really overdone it on the monetary easy side, you have to think that they'll jump the gun, or they'll do, well, they won't jump the gun because they've been over easy so long, but you think that they'll try to do something that will be a kindler, gentler way of pulling out of the monetary policy, but it just won't happen that way. It's never that easy. No, I wish it was. I wish it was. All right, just in the couple of minutes we got left, let me ask you this question, and I always like to ask smart guys like you this question, but as we're heading into the back end of this year, what are the top three things that you're going to focus on?
So the top, okay, so good question. I don't know if I could answer, but I'm going to try. Okay, so certainly, how's the economy performing? I mean, if
right.
we are going to sustain 3% plus real GDP growth, the Treasury market's mispriced. Yields have to go a lot higher. That's number one. Number two, when do we get the Fed exit strategy, and what does it look like? I would not be surprised if it's in the meeting minutes from September, which means we get those minutes in October, I believe October 8th, and then we'll get the ending of the taper in late October. So watch GDP. Two, watch the Fed's exit strategy. Are they turning maybe slightly more hawkish? You want to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the third piece I would watch is inflation. The last couple of months, we've rounded down a little bit on the CPI. It's been a little bit weaker than expected. My guess is it's temporary. If you get strong GDP, as I'm forecasting, a slight subtle shift on the Fed, with them telling you how the exit path might look, Yellen said we'll have it by year end at the latest, and then your core inflation starts to creep a little higher, that to me is just not good for fixed income investors. So those are the things I'm going to watch. I think that's how it's going to play out in a more bearish fixed income fashion. Again, ultimately bullish for stocks.
All right, Joe Lavorgna from Deutsche Bank and CNBC contributor. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Andy. It's my pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break. I'm Andy Bush. This is Engage.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Tune in to the Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel.
It's a sad fact that fraud is rampant in today's business environment. The headlines scream about once prestigious organizations falling victim to or crumbling due to the consequences of fraud. How do you keep fraud from affecting you and your business? Tune in to Fraud Talk with host Chris Marquet. Chris has over 30 years of fraud investigation experience, business intelligence, and is a renowned security consultant. Chris and his guests will inform you and help keep you from being the next statistic of fraud. Tune in Mondays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.